As one museum closes, another swings open its doors. What claims to be the world's biggest museum for contemporary art debuts this weekend in an unlikely place, a gritty, depressed former factory town along New York's Hudson River. The museum used to be a Nabisco factory that printed the boxes for animal crackers. Now it houses works by such giants as Andy Warhol, Richard Serra, and Agnes Martin. Karen Michelle reports that both museum officials and locals hope that Beacon, New York, now will become a beacon for art lovers.
As Beacon's mayor, Clara Lou Gould, knows, the city used to have a less than stellar reputation.
It was the armpit of Dutchess County. It was like the little brawly. There was a bar in every corner. It was definitely not a place where you'd expect to find an art center, an art museum.
According to Gould, Beacon was also once known as the hat capital of the Northeast. She says one of the country's first lawnmowers was made in Beacon, but for more than two decades, the town has suffered. Only one hat maker remains, and the lawnmower plant now makes countertops.
I never knew Beacon existed before spotting it from the air that day.
Michael Govan is the director of the Dia Art Foundation, a nonprofit institution that has lavishly supported artists and exhibited and collected their work.
In 1997 and 98, we were looking for space for the collection, and I was piloting my own little airplane. So we flew down low and took in the beauty of the valley. We looked down, and there was an empty factory that I think we made a joke about. We could put the collection there. And it was not until several weeks later, when all of our other options fell through, that I recalled this strange factory. Came up here on a cold, rainy day, I believe it was in April, walked in this building, and it appeared to be brighter inside than it was outside on that dim day.
Artists have also been drawn to the Hudson Valley. In the early 19th century, landscape painter Thomas Cole and others were attracted by the light.
That sense of light and of changing light is really important to this museum, this place, the Hudson Valley, and to a lot of the work. Some of the work is vast and needs to be seen in light more akin to nature than some kind of artificial spotlights.
White walls reflect only the light collected by the skylights and a few clear glass side panes. There are none of the lights attached to frames or peering down from ceilings that you usually see in galleries, and Dia Beacon closes at nightfall. Painter Agnes Martin's fine gray grids seem to hum and glow in the natural light. Michael Heiser's 22-foot deep geometric shapes burrow into the floor of the museum, and to stand at the edge of his four concave wells is an experience not unlike looking over the edge of a cliff. Walking into one of Richard Serra's 13-foot-tall ellipses is equally disorienting. There are three of the huge, gently curved steel plates. Dia Board Chairman Leonard Riggio first saw them in New York City.
And right there, I really grabbed hold of the concept of permanence, the idea of the connection between the art and the space, the idea of the artist controlling the entire exhibition. And I would say that was a profound day for me.
So he bought all three pieces and kept buying art for the foundation, so many that there needed to be more space than Dia's current galleries in Chelsea. To date, Riggio's contributed more than $30 million to the cost of the upriver outpost, now called Dia Beacon. Not that all of his time goes into the Art Foundation.
I have a day job as chairman of the board and founder of Barnes & Noble Incorporated.
Riggio wants Dia Beacon to be a place where people will come and enjoy the art, and not be put off by work that can often confront as much as entertain. One of Lawrence Wiener's three pieces at Dia is meant to be painted on a wall, any wall or not. Michael Govan reads the text.
One, the artist may construct the work. Two, the work may be fabricated. Three, the work need not be built. And as an artwork, it sort of sets a tone for the range of possibilities of thinking about art that are present here, and that this was a generation of artists who questioned the very nature of what art might be, not because they wanted to get rid of art, but because they wanted to open many new possibilities for it.
Still, much of the art created since the 1960s by the likes of Donald Judd, Dan Flavin, Joseph Beuys, and others is a bit of a stretch for the former factory town. For longtime residents like George Burwell, the art is less important than what the museum is doing to energize the community.
It's great, believe it or not. It is, because, like, you know, it brings different people income, the whole outside income that stays here. It should be great, you know. It should be great, you know. And give the place a little more atmosphere.
Storefronts are being painted. Galleries are opening. Even the diner is serving again now after being closed for many years. Sarah Pasty is the director of one of the new galleries. She recently moved from Seattle. She lived in Brooklyn before that. She's not so sure that if you build it, they will come.
I think it would be a stretch to think of it as Chelsea North. I think just the geography here is physically so very different from Manhattan. Clearly, Chelsea is, you can take a subway, you can take a cab, and in a very short time, you're right in the heart of Manhattan.
Beacon is an hour and 20 minutes away, but the train stops in Beacon, and today's opening is already sold out. Beacon's longtime mayor, Clara Lou Gould, is looking forward to the crowds.
When we have a parking problem, we'll know we have it made.
For NPR News, I'm Karen Michel in Beacon, New York.